Hello and welcome. We are listening to another program here on Radio Roman Catholic, and this special is about Nostra Aetate. That's N-O-S-T-R-A-A-E-T-A-T-E. It is called the Declaration on the Relation of the Church to Non-Christian Religions. It came out of the Second Vatican Council and was promulgated by Pope Paul VI on the 28th day of October 1965. The reason we're talking about Nostra Aetate now is that we're at the 40th anniversary of this document. There's been a big celebration in Rome and at the Vatican concerning this document. There's been an enormous amount of talk about it over the years, particularly this year in light of the 40th anniversary. So what we're doing today is we're examining just what is Nostra Aetate. It is not a very long document. It has five paragraphs. In the first paragraph, it talks about some general goals, if you will, or some general observations, too, about mankind being drawn closer together, that the Church sees one of her tasks of promoting unity and love among men, and indeed among many nations, says the document, and I'm reading directly from the document, that the Church looks at the community of all peoples who are one in their origin, that is, they all come from God, they're one in their final goal, which is go to God. The document says that the elect will be united in the holy city, the city ablaze with the glory of God, where the nations will walk in his light. The document then goes on to say, men expect from the various religions answers to the unsolved riddles of the human condition, which today, even as in former times, deeply stir the hearts of men. What is man? What is the meaning, the aim of our life? What is moral good? And so forth. In paragraph 2, the document talks about how advanced cultures have struggled to answer the same questions by means of even more refined concepts and a more developed language. Indeed, says this paragraph, the Church proclaims and ever must proclaim Christ, the way, the truth, and the life, John 14:6, in whom men may find the fullness of religious life, in whom God has reconciled all things in himself. Now, that's a significant quote because the document goes on to say, Nostra Aetate goes on to say, that the Catholic Church rejects nothing that is true and holy in these religions, but once again emphasizes that Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. In paragraph 3 of Nostra Aetate, the Church then talks about Muslims. In paragraph 4, it speaks about the Jews. And in that paragraph, it says a number of things. It talks about how there is a spiritual bond that ties the people of the New Covenant to Abraham's stock. It says that the Church cannot forget that she draws sustenance from the root of the well-cultivated olive tree onto which have been grafted the wild shoots of the Gentiles. It talks that, as Holy Scripture testifies, Jerusalem did not recognize the time of her visitation, nor did the Jews in large number accept the gospel. Indeed, I'm reading directly from Nostra Aetate, indeed, not a few opposed its spreading. Nevertheless, God holds the Jews most dear for the sake of their fathers. He does not repent of the gifts he makes or of the calls he issues, such as the witness of the apostle. In company with the prophets and the same apostle, the Church awaits that day known to God alone on which all peoples will address the Lord in a single voice and serve him shoulder to shoulder. In paragraph 4, Nostra Aetate says, true, the Jewish authorities and those who follow their lead pressed for the death of Christ. Still, what happened in his passion cannot be charged against all the Jews, without distinction, then alive, nor against the Jews of today. Although the Church is the new people of God, the Jews should not be presented as rejected or accursed of God. We've heard a lot about Nostra Aetate. A lot of it has been written by those who are within various Catholic organizations. With us here in the studio is Dr. Mike Jones. Mike, you've heard a number of the statements that have been issued by sources other than the Vatican about Nostra Aetate. What have you heard?
Well, I've heard all kinds of things. The recent issue of America has devoted the entire issue to Nostra Aetate and various people talking about what it meant and so on and so forth. One of these people is the chief rabbi of Israel, Yonah Metzger, wrote an article called Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. And this is Yonah Metzger's view of the traditional, which is to say the bad, pre-Vatican II teaching on the Jews. He starts off by mentioning an incident where Theodor Herzl, the founder of the Zionist movement, met with Pope Pius X in 1904. And Herzl asked Pius X for his support for the reestablishment of the State of Israel. And the Pope said, in a word, no, we're not going to support it. And he said, this is Herzl's rendition, so we don't know how accurate it is. But anyway, Herzl says that Pius X stated that the Jews have not recognized our Lord, and therefore we cannot recognize the Jewish people. Thus, while we cannot prevent the Jews from going to Jerusalem, we could never sanction it. Now, of course, Rabbi Metzger is not particularly happy with that, and then he goes on from there to say that Pius, this is a direct quote now, Pius was simply expressing one part of the normative view of Jews that had been held throughout Christendom for many centuries. The Jews rejected Christ and were guilty of the crime of deicide. Consequently, they had been rejected by the Creator in favor of the Christians who were, quote, the new Israel, close quote. These attitudes, known as supersessionism and the teaching of contempt, laid the groundwork for centuries of discrimination, persecution, and violence against Jews, culminating in the Shoah, or the Holocaust, in which one-third of Jewry was murdered. Huh. Now, what he's just to give you another instance of the same sort of thing, this is the diocesan, this is the Albany newspaper, okay, about Interfaith Session Mark's 40th year of Nostra Aetate. Bishop Hubbard was there, Bishop Howard Hubbard, the ordinary of the Diocese of Albany, said that, 40th anniversary preached Nostra Aetate, preached tolerance and cooperation with members of other religions as part of an attempt to modernize the church made during the Second Vatican Council. Perhaps the most influential document of Vatican II. Because the article goes on to say, the church document was also the first time the church officially denounced anti-Semitism and officially repudiated the charge that Jews were responsible for the death of Christ, an allegation that led to centuries of persecution. It then goes on to say, the article concludes, the road to Hitler's final solution was paved with the persecution of Jews by the Roman Catholic Church and other denominations. And that's Rabbi Beverly Magidson. So, there seems to be a pretty clear consensus here that the Roman Catholic Church was responsible for the Holocaust, and that Nostra Aetate was repentant for the fact that the church had caused the Holocaust. Now, this is, it seems to me, just in my reading, the generally accepted view of what Nostra Aetate is. According to Rabbi Metzger, Nostra Aetate repudiated the idea that the church was the new Israel. Well, it's a little bit confusing, or not quite apparent, because of your translation. Your translation says, while it is true that the church is the new people of God, well, that's not, I mean, the translation is, while it is true that the church is the new Israel. So here you've got a situation where here's the rabbi interpreting a Nostra Aetate by telling us that it says the exact opposite of what it says. In other words, the Nostra Aetate restated the belief that the church is the new Israel, and now these people are saying, no, that's bad, that's supersessionism, and the church abandoned that. Well, it didn't, first of all. I mean, that's simply not true.
That's correct. I mean, it is very clear in Nostra Aetate, in my version here, as well as in the one you're looking at, that the church is saying we are the new Israel. We are the logical outgrowth of what was given to the patriarchs, and we are what has become now the way to salvation.
I don't think there's any way of getting around this. I mean, I don't. The church, the Catholic Church, would have to repudiate what it is. It's not like, you know, okay, you can eat meat on Friday here. It's repudiation of what the church is. Is the church the new Israel? Did Christ come? Did the Jews reject Christ? And so on and so forth. Well, these are fundamental questions.
Right.
The second issue as to the who killed Christ? Well, Nostra Aetate again says not all Jews at the time of Christ were responsible for his death. Well, that's not saying that no Jew is responsible for the death of Christ. I mean, I don't know what document these people are reading. But the fact of the matter is that this has become the normative explanation of a document that says the exact opposite of what the normative explanation says.
That's right. It's a false interpretation of the document.
It's one thing when the Jews have this interpretation, but it's another thing when you're constantly reading this in Catholic publications and Catholic interfaith dialogues. They're basically proposing the same interpretation, the same erroneous interpretation of the document that the Jews are proposing.
That's right. And let me read that paragraph 4 again. It says, "True, the Jewish authorities and those who followed their lead pressed for the death of Christ."
Well, if we can stop right there, that means some Jews are responsible for the death of Christ.
That's correct. And
I read it.
That's correct. The document references John 19:6.
And the other thing is that the document is pulling punches here. They have been trying, the Catholic Church has been trying to finesse the Gospel of John ever since Vatican II. The fact of the matter is that John doesn't say the Jewish leaders did it. The Jews did it. The Jews called for his death. We don't have this sense of corporate identity anymore because everybody's supposed to be a rugged individual. But St. John, you know, did not live in this country, and he says repeatedly, the Jews did this, the Jews did that.
That's right, and also so did Matthew. Matthew wrote the same thing, and Matthew, of course, wrote how the crowd, he says the Jews, said that let the blood of Christ be upon us and upon our children. That's the famous passage from Matthew 27:25, and the whole people said in reply, "His blood be upon us and upon our children." Now that's according to the New American Version here of the Holy Bible.
Right. This passage was, of course, the big issue in Mel Gibson's movie.
That's correct.
Again, there was a big symposium at Notre Dame on, you know, was Mel Gibson an anti-Semite because he's, you know, and the trump card that there were two Jews at the symposium, one was a rabbi, but the trump card that they threw on the table was, as proof that Mel Gibson was an anti-Semite, was that he quoted Matthew.
That's correct.
Well, wait a minute, fellas. I mean, I was there. It was made clear at this symposium that only students were allowed to ask questions. I'm not a student, so I didn't ask the question. But if I had been allowed to ask a question, I would have asked the head of the film department at Notre Dame who made the statement. Well, if Mel Gibson's an anti-Semite for quoting Matthew, that must mean that Matthew is an anti-Semite, right?
That's exactly right. And the church has taught that the scripture is inspired by the Holy Spirit. It is accurate. That's in the dogmatic constitution of the church. It is paragraph 19. So then I think by implication, what you have to conclude is that the Holy Spirit is an anti-Semite and that God is an anti-Semite.
I think you'd have to draw that conclusion.
I think that's a logical conclusion based on what the church has taught.
So if the gospel is proclaiming anti-Semitism, then every Christian must be an anti-Semite. He has to be an anti-Semite. If this is anti-Semitism, then we must be anti-Semites. We have to be,
right?
Because we have to follow God's word, and that's God's word.
That's right, and that's what the church teaches.
So I don't know why they want to go down this road. I mean, I don't understand. I don't understand what they think. What, let's say, Rabbi Signer and the head of the television program at Notre Dame think they're going to achieve by pursuing this line of thought.
Well, I'm not sure either. But what it does is it has the effect of making people who call themselves Catholics or members of the Catholic Church to recoil at the sacred book and perhaps even to eschew or to turn away from their faith. Perhaps what it does is because so many Catholics are so poorly catechized, it gives a false catechesis to a lot of Catholics.
Well, that's one reaction. There is another reaction, though. In other words, if as they say, or another guy who has done this more prominently is Daniel Jonah Goldhagen, who says that Catholicism is intrinsically anti-Semitic. The other reaction would be, well, I guess we're anti-Semitic. I mean, the word is a loaded term, okay? Yeah. I mean, anti-Semitism, to mean anything, means promoting hatred of a Jew because of his race. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not what the church is doing. It's not what the church has ever done.
No.
It did not do that at the time of the Third Reich in Germany. It didn't do it at the time of St. John when he wrote his gospel. Church never did that.
No.
Okay? But, on the other hand, there is an irreconcilable animosity between Jews and Christians. And it's never going to go away. And I think that if anything has proven this, it is Nostra Aetate. I mean, what I'm talking about, the animus, this, if you want it, the term I used in one of the articles I wrote is the German term Judenfeindlich, okay, sort of antipathy toward Jews. Is St. John an anti-Semite? The answer is no, okay? Can't be. He's a Semite. Jesus Christ is a Semite. It's preposterous to call these people anti-Semites, that they hate someone. They hate Jesus because of his race. They hate the Jews because of their race. That's preposterous, okay? But there is this antagonism between Jews and Christians at the very beginning. St. John's gospel is full of it. Jesus Christ is the victim of it. You know?
Well, I mean, you're right. What you're describing here is anti-Semitism has come to mean modern day a hatred of a race known as the Jews. But there is a fundamental difference between Christianity, and I'm going to say Christianity meaning Roman Catholicism. I'm not including everyone other than, I'm not including the Protestant sects. I'm saying Roman Catholicism in particular, but there is a fundamental difference in the religion of Roman Catholicism and in the religion of Judaism, which puts an antipathy, if you will, between the two. They are fundamentally different.
Right.
And at the celebration, it is very interesting, at the end of the celebration, actually at the beginning of the celebration of the 40th anniversary, October 27th and 28th in Rome, one of the chief rabbis of Italy, I believe was the chief rabbi of Rome, refused to come to the celebration. And this is reported, once again, in the Catholic news services and the Catholic news agency, I believe. But the Catholic news agencies reported this. This is not made up, but this rabbi refused to come to the celebration because he said Cardinal Lustiger from Paris, France, would be there. Well, who is Cardinal Lustiger? Well, Cardinal Lustiger is an elderly gentleman who is a cardinal. He is a convert from Judaism to the Roman Catholic faith. He is a cardinal. He was one of the contenders, or one who people thought may possibly succeed the late John Paul II as Pope in April of this year. This rabbi said he would not come to this ceremony, this celebration, since Cardinal Lustiger was there, and I'm paraphrasing now what he said, but he said that he wouldn't come because Lustiger's conversion shows that the Roman Catholic faith is got a continuing antipathy, disrespect of Judaism. This seems to go to that very thing, that very antipathy that you mentioned earlier, Mike, between the two. This is, to me, does not show the very quality of tolerance that the Jews seem to want to try to portray towards the Catholics. They want the Catholics to be tolerant to them, accepting of them, yet they don't have that towards the Catholics.
Well, what does tolerance mean? I mean, what could tolerance possibly mean in this context? First of all, if the Church is going to go down this road and quote, you know, all these rabbis who mockingly refer to the Church as the New Israel, as if that has been repudiated by Nostra Aetate, when in fact it has been restated by Nostra Aetate, then the Church should follow through logically on what it's doing. In other words, from the Jewish point of view, what Cardinal Lustiger did was wicked. He's an apostate.
Right.
He left the Jewish faith and went over to the side of the enemy. Well, what should the church should the church should then excommunicate Cardinal Lustiger for becoming a Catholic? I mean, this is the logic of what the rabbi is saying, the rabbi who did not show up at the celebration. This is the logic of what he's saying.
Right.
This is preposterous. This, the other thing is, the church should recognize, would have to recognize, according to this point of view, that St. John was a wicked man. He was a wicked man.
And if you say that, then you have to go to the very foundations, the very reason of existence, the very heart of Roman Catholicism, of Christianity.
Right. If he's a wicked man, then why should we base our lives on his writing?
That's right. Why should we be Christians? Why should we be Roman Catholics?
So we have to repudiate, in the interest of dialogue here, we have to repudiate the Catholic faith. I mean, these are the terms that have been set for dialogue by the Jews. There's no other explanation here.
Well, and there's a lot of support for what you say. Once again, the news agencies reported that the rabbis at the celebration did call on the church, the Roman Catholic Church, to issue a statement in which the Roman Catholic Church would cease to evangelize Jews, that is, bring Jews into the fold as Roman Catholics, into the one true church, into this new Israel, this new people of God. At this celebration, the church was lectured by the rabbis not to anymore preach that Jews must convert.
What possible basis could you have for talking to such people? This is the center of the Catholic faith. Go and baptize all nations.
That's correct.
You have to spread the gospel. That's your mission as a Christian.
That's correct.
And the first group of people to whom the gospel was offered was the Jews, and they rejected it. So the church cannot go along with these ultimata without denying its very essence.
That's right.
Let me give you another version of this. Okay, this is another rabbi, also in American Magazine, talking about the Interfaith Theological Forum founded at the John Paul II Cultural Center in Washington, D.C.
Right.
This center brings Jews and Catholics together for theological discussions that increase awareness of our similarities and differences in order to expand our appreciation of the other's unique path to God.
Hmm.
Now,
that's confusing.
Explain that to me, David.
Well, it sounds to me that you can see God, which is the purpose of life, to know, love him, and serve him in this life so we can be with him in the next life, which has always been the teaching of the Catholic Church. It seems that you can know, love, and serve him in this life and be with him in the next if you remain a Jew as well as a Hindu, a Buddhist, a Muslim, or whatever. So then what's the purpose of
Catholic faith? It's a little bit more pointed, I think, with the Jews. Because I don't know. There's in a sense no relationship between Hinduism and Christianity, or Hinduism and Judaism.
That's
in a sense, they grew up completely independently of her. They sort of bumped into each other when the Portuguese arrived in Goa or something. No, it came before that, but I mean primarily. But anyway, what we're talking about here is the relationship between Catholics and Jews, because this relationship was created at the very foundation of Catholicism, and I would say at the very foundation of what we call Judaism, because Judaism as a religion is younger than Catholicism,
mm-hmm.
Okay, a number of years younger. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what we're saying here is that those who accept Christ can be saved, and those who reject Christ can be saved.
Yes, and that's a fundamental shift from what the church has always taught.
Well, it's not only a fundamental shift in what the church taught, it violates the principle of non-contradiction. How can this be possible? Why are we wasting precious time and all sorts of oxygen debating ridiculous propositions like this? Why is this a tree had to die, okay, for this magazine to be printed, okay?
Right.
And what are we? They're talking about the other's unique path to God. This is preposterous.
What can possibly be served by this? I don't know the answer to that. I suppose one thing could be is that, well, suddenly now we look like equals on our way to God.
Well, sure. What you can say here is that we've taken the Enlightenment as the paradigm for all of our religious endeavors.
That's a bad paradigm.
Well, I mean, this is preposterous. I mean, if you want to go back to paradigms, go back to Lessing's play Natan der Weise, which is based on Moses Mendelssohn, the famous the Jew who is basically the creator of Reform Judaism in Germany at the time of the Enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Lessing says that, or Natan der Weise is set at the time of Saladin and the Crusades in Jerusalem, and so we have the Crusader, the Christian, Saladin, the Muslim, and Natan, and they're sort of debating, who has the true religion? And so Natan comes up with this great parable of the rings in which God created all of these rings, but only one is the true ring, but no one really knows what ring is the true ring. And so we have to behave as if they're all the true ring.
Isn't this Masonic teaching?
Oh, yeah. Well, it is Masonic. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's exactly like the symposia that Roy Fleen would write up in his book, which later became implemented in Masonic thought. In other words, what you're saying is there is a superior religion, a secret religion,
right, and
above Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, and we can become part of it as soon as we join the Masonic Lodge. I mean, if you believe in this, kind of Enlightenment Masonic mumbo jumbo, be my guest. I mean, there's a Masonic Lodge right down the street. You can join it. But that's not the Catholic faith, and there's no point in debating it as if, this is somehow some. If you think that this is plausible, if you think this kind of agnosticism is going to lead to a world full of peace, well, I just recommend the last 200 so years of history. Look at what happened when the Masons got into power in France.
You're right. And ever since then, it's been war after war, strife after strife, people turned against people, individuals against individuals, and it goes on and on and on. I don't think that we have seen the end of it. I think it's just going to pick up and get worse. But Masonry was, of course, denounced and decried by the Catholic Church in the 1730s. And anybody who is a Mason cannot be a Catholic. You're instantly, automatically excommunicated. And what you are talking about, what we're talking about here, Michael, is, of course, we're talking about which is true, which faith is true, which one is right. Is it Roman Catholicism, is it Judaism, or is it this Masonry that we're talking about? Because it is illogical to have all faiths true about everything all the time. It can't be. It is an impossibility.
Well, we have to engage in dialogue so that we can expand our appreciation of the other's unique path to God. What does that mean? I don't understand.
I have
that.
No idea what that means. If you take a look at the Acts of the Apostles, you see Peter and Paul going into the crowds, whether they were Jewish or Gentile, and saying, you people need to convert, especially with the Jews. Peter would go out there and he would say, you're the people who killed Christ, and you men need to convert. And they converted in the thousands, according to the gospel accounts. Has that happened recently? Did the Pope in August in Cologne during World Youth Day, did he ask the Jews to convert? And at the end of October, did the Pope, did Cardinal Walter Kaspar ask the Jews to convert? No.
No, the Pope, when he met with the Jews in the Cologne Cathedral, basically engaged in a defensive kind of talk.
What is there to talk about, though?
Well, he decided he was going to talk about the Holocaust in Germany. He's a German. He's now the Pope. We have almost 40 years of dialogue here. So he starts off by talking about Nazism as a neo-pagan ideology. This is, in essence, what he said when the Pope issued his apology. Okay, but apparently Ratzinger had this input on it, where the Church simply refused to take responsibility for the Holocaust because the Nazis were not Christian.
Right.
Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that, okay? So, I guess he thought they didn't hear it the first time. Or I guess he thought, I'll try it again now that I'm in the Cologne Cathedral. I can say it in German and so on. Maybe they'll understand it this time. Well, he says it again, and guess what? He goes up to the rabbi at the time. I think his name is Paul Spiegel. And Paul Spiegel says to him, thank you for taking the first step toward recognizing the church's responsibility for the Holocaust. Well, wait a minute, Rabbi. He just said the exact opposite of that. You know, there is something about, I guess it's Jewish hermeneutics or something, where they you know, maybe it's because they're so influential, but they say the exact opposite of what you just said, and that then is supposed to become the normative interpretation of the thing.
Well, now, they also said in Cologne, right after the Pope made his statement, they also said, then we want the Roman Catholic Church to open up all of its files so we can look at them and look
well,
at
I
them
think,
and examine
I
them
think,
in light of the Holocaust.
Right. I think we should have a little quid pro quo here, okay?
Okay.
Let the Vatican open up their files if the ADL will open up their files.
Oh, my gosh. I think that there will be reams and reams of paper. Many trees will have to die if the ADL has to open its files.
I would really like to see the ADL's files. I'm a scholar and researcher. I think that they should be open.
Well, they should be open, especially since that's an organization which claims to be struggling for civil rights for all people around the world, or words of that effect. It's of some note and some interest, too, that the church, also through Cardinal Caspar, has decided to give an award to a rabbi, Rabbi David Rosen, the Interreligious Affairs Director for the American Jewish Committee, was named a Papal Knight Commander in a ceremony in Jerusalem on Thursday. Now, this is a week ago Thursday. That would have been the 3rd of November. The honor recognizes those who have provided, and I'm quoting directly from the ledger online, the honor recognizes those who have provided meritorious service to the Catholic Church. Rosen, who is based in Jerusalem, has worked for decades to improve Jewish-Catholic relations. He was particularly instrumental in negotiations that established diplomatic relations between the Holy See and Israel in 1993. End of quote. What is the American Jewish Committee? Well, I did a quick search online of who they are, what they are, what they stand for. Let me see if I can pull it up here real quick. They've got a website which talks about their mission. And they talk about their mission as being threefold: to safeguard the welfare and security of Jews in the United States, in Israel, and throughout the world, to strengthen the basic principles of pluralism around the world as the best defense against anti-Semitism and other forms of bigotry, to enhance the quality of American Jewish life by helping to ensure Jewish continuity and deepen ties between American and Israeli Jews. And then they've got a number of different initiatives. They've got a domestic policy initiative. They've got interethnic partnerships, interfaith programs. Well, what's their domestic policy initiative? Let's just take a look at that. Under civil rights, what do they list? They list things that emphasize the celebration of the 50th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. They celebrate same-sex unions. They have adopted a position opposing a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution that would restrict marriage to the union of a man and a woman. The AJC has also joined in resisting capital punishment. But what's also interesting is that the AJC has also issued a number of press releases where it has stood in favor of abortion, to include partial birth abortion. And I guess my question, and I think it's a fair one, and it ties in with this whole discussion of Nostra Aetate, how can someone from the AJC get this award from the Catholic Church, belong to an organization that advances positions that are fundamentally against the positions of the Catholic Church? Am I missing something here? Have I framed the question wrong?
If you're missing it, I'm missing it too. What you need is someone from the AJC on here to explain this to you. But I don't understand how you can give an award to someone who is working against everything that the church stands for.
I don't understand it either.
I mean, one of the fundamental divides in this country is the Jews and Catholics. It's, you know, whether it's the McCarthy era, whether it's abortion, they're on fundamentally different sides of the cultural divide in this country. So why, I mean, why would the church honor a man who belongs to the AJC, which is an organization that promotes partial birth abortion and homosexual marriage? I don't understand this.
I don't understand it either. And I
well, you got two guys here who don't understand it. So I guess we'd have to we're going to have to look elsewhere for someone who understands this.
I think we'll have to call someone from the AJC to explain that, and perhaps that would be a good discussion here.
I think you should call Walter Kaspar and ask him to explain it, because he's the one who needs to do the explaining. Why do you honor someone who does who supports all of the things that the church considers are bad?
If this individual was in fact, if this Rabbi Rosen was in fact instrumental in normalizing relations between the Holy See and the Vatican back in 1993, I guess the question is why the 12-year delay, and does he have to be elevated to the rank of a papal knight?
Well, I think Israel should honor. I'm not sure the Vatican should honor somebody who organized that arrangement, because I don't think the Jews have done anything that they said they were going to do. The Vatican is furious at Israel because it simply has not followed through on what it agreed to do.
Now, we're talking about the recognizing and protecting the rights of the church within Israel, actually. That's what you're referencing, correct?
Yes, right.
So, there was a flap earlier this year that involved the Pope's supposed insensitive statement that he did not condemn terrorism against Israel. He condemned terrorism in a number of other places, especially some places in the Middle East where there had just recently been some bombs exploded and other terrorist acts committed. This was in July. At the time, there hadn't been any terrorism done in Israel, and he was immediately castigated by Israeli officials as being insensitive. And as a result, there was some press, there were some words that went back and forth between the Vatican and Israel. And Asia News broke the story that this may very well be simply a cover for what Israel is doing and not honoring its agreement.
Right. That was the speculation at that time, because they overreacted to something that the Pope what they considered a significant omission in the Pope's speech.
Okay, so we've got Nostra Aetate. We've determined here in talking that it doesn't say what these Catholic magazines and diocesan papers, which is really troubling, because a lot of Catholics read the diocesan paper and that's all they get. These accounts in the diocesan papers and in Catholic magazines, or supposedly Catholic magazines like America, are not accurately reporting on Nostra Aetate, on what it is.
No, they're not. The Nostra Aetate says that, number one, the church is the new Israel, and number two, it says that some Jews at the time of Christ were responsible for his death. So it has now been twisted into saying the exact opposite of that, which is not true. And why these Catholic magazines publish this is beyond me. I don't understand it.
Well, it would indicate to me just simply a lack of knowledge either on the publishers or some kind of co-option in some grand enterprise.
Well, I can't believe that the editor of America Magazine has never read Nostra Aetate. He's doing a symposium in his magazine and he never read it. I mean, I find this hard to believe. So we have to search elsewhere. No one can be that. Not even. I'm sad. No one can be that dumb. Okay.
I'm sure a lot of people come to mind when you think that.
I mean, not even an editor of a diocesan newspaper can be that dumb.
Well, I think that some of the editors of the diocesan newspaper may not necessarily pay good mind to the Holy Spirit, but these guys work in close connection with their bishop. So it's a good bet that if the editors allow this to be published, the bishops are somehow complicit allowing error to be spread.
Well, there seems to be this interfaith dialogue mindset that is like an echo chamber where they keep saying the same things over and over again, and they have no contact with reality.
You know, when I hear the talk dialogue, especially in the context of Jews and Catholics, it reminds me of the so-called dialogue, peaceful coexistence that we heard from the communists in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And all that was is just a way to position themselves, though ultimately their system failed in a lot of countries in Europe, but it was a way to position themselves. It was a way for the weak to weaken the strong and get power. That's kind of my perception.
Well, traditionally this has always been the role of tolerance. The people who ask for tolerance are the people that don't have power. Once those people do have power, tolerance is no longer a virtue. I mean, I don't, you know, universities are the classic example in our area of this kind of thing. We've already had our little program on deviance, you know what I mean, and
Yeah.
the redefinition of deviance, which means as soon as you get power, then you exercise intolerance on everyone else. This is sort of the norm of life. It's also the trajectory of basically every revolution that has ever taken place on this planet. So, you know, tolerance, we understand that. That's not what we're talking about here, okay?
Right.
That's a sort of intermediary strategy. The trouble is, it seems to me that what exactly, where has this dialogue led? The
right.
dialogue has now led to the point where the rabbis at the official celebration are demanding that the church say that it will not work for the conversion of the Jews. Well, what kind of dialogue is this? I mean, what are we talking about here?
That's not a dialogue. That's an ultimatum.
That's an ultimatum. That's an ultimatum. That's not a dialogue. And it's a completely impossible ultimatum to fulfill without rejecting what the church stands for. Now, this is, I think, the essence of what we're talking about here. The best example I can give is the Jewish attack on Oberammergau, the Passion Play in Bavaria. Mm-hmm. There's a book on this by a man named Shapiro. He interestingly mentions Nostra Aetate in that book. He says, we had them, namely the Bavarian peasants of Oberammergau who put on their play, between the anvil of Jewish organizations and the hammer of Nostra Aetate. Or maybe it's reversed. The anvil of Nostra Aetate and the hammer of Jewish organizations, whatever. Well, that gives you some indication of how they perceive Nostra Aetate. Okay, it's not dialogue. We're going to hammer you with Nostra Aetate. And that's, in a sense, my sense of the 40 years of what we've been through. But to give you, okay, so the peasants get hammered because the bishop caves in to Jewish pressure and doesn't support them. This is a play that's been going on every 10 years for, you know, since the 30 Years' War, when the city was threatened by plague and they made a vow. And it's been a bone in their craw, in their throat, ever since. So, where does dialogue bring us? Well, dialogue is means that Herr Huber, who is now the director of the play, shows up in Abe Foxman's office with the script. Okay, and now Abe Foxman has veto power over the script of the Nostra Aetate, over the Oberammergau Passion Play.
You mean to say he wasn't hired as a consultant?
No, they sent their representatives there, and this was, so the damage had already been done.
My goodness.
Okay, so this is basically a bolderized, censored play, you know, that has been tailored to Jewish sensibilities. But what are Jewish sensibilities in this regard? Huber says, this is in the book, in the Shapiro book, Huber says to Abe Foxman, we would like you to come to our play. And at this point, Foxman blows up and he says to him, you want me, what's it take to get me to come to your play? Put on a passion play without the crucifixion.
Huh.
Okay.
Well, that's
okay,
the basis of the play.
Okay, Abe, now we know where you stand on this thing. So it's not that there were offensive costumes or offensive this or offensive that. The crucifixion is offensive to Abe Fox.
Well, that's the central piece of Roman Catholicism, of all Christianity, the sacrifice of the Son of God for all men.
Now, are you sure of that, David?
Yes, I am. I am sure of that.
Have you checked your local...
no, I haven't checked the local office.
The diocesan office for interfaith dialogue. Have you checked with them?
The ecumenical office? No, I haven't done that.
It may have changed. The crucifixion may not be quite as central as we thought it was. No, of course it's central.
Of course it is. Now,
but the point is that this. What you're seeing here is it's not that there was some type of bigotry on the part of these peasants. I mean, they were basically portraying the thing as they saw it. What's offensive is the crucifixion. What is offensive is Christ.
Yeah, Christ is offensive.
I mean, I'm not making this up. This is Abe Foxman's reaction to these Bavarian peasants being influenced by Nostra Aetate, bending over backwards to appease this guy, and basically a person who is unappeasable. This is unappeasable. So what we need to realize at this point is dialogue has as its basis, has to have goodwill. There's no goodwill here.
No.
There's no goodwill.
No, there's no goodwill. The objective is to have the church relinquish the faith. That's the objective. What is troubling in these accounts from the Catholic News Service and from other Catholic wires is that there's no mention of what the response was to the Jewish rabbis who made these statements at the 40th celebration about the church giving up its mandate to convert all nations, or about the one rabbi, the senior rabbi of Rome, who didn't show up because Cardinal Lush DeGé was there. There's no indication of how the church responded. Now, that's troubling. And that should be troubling to people, because the correct response by the church should be, well, you know, we are the Roman Catholic Church. We have our faith, which comes from God, and, you know, as a minimum, we expect you to respect that. But perhaps most importantly, we call on you to convert, to accept the cross, and to gain salvation, because that's the only way.
Well, if we take it back a step to the first step you mentioned, this dialogue is supposed to be based on mutual respect. Well,
yes.
Where's the mutual respect here?
Well, there isn't.
If you're, are we asking the Jews to abandon their
there's nothing that's saying with this current so-called dialogue. The church isn't asking the Jews to convert in these meetings.
Let's take this back a step. Okay, the Jews can have organizations like the ADL can have veto power over the Oberammergau Passion Play. They basically control the entire Oberammergau Passion Play now. The Bavarians rolled over and played dead. Okay, well, what about dialogue about the Talmud?
Oh, that'd be a good topic.
What about passages that refer to Christ as a bastard in the Talmud? What about passages that refer to Christ as being in hell now, damned for eternity up to his neck in burning excrement?
Mm-hmm.
What about the passages about the Blessed Mother as a whore? What about aren't Christians supposed to find this offensive?
Well, they should, and aren't we? Shouldn't we talk too about there are other passages in the Talmud that say that the non-Jews are subhumans? I mean, shouldn't we talk about this too?
Well, it seems to me the dialogue is pretty much a one-way street here. Now,
yes,
there was a time when this was not the case.
So it's really not dialogue, it's a one-way street.
It's not a dialogue, and I don't understand exactly what dialogue is possible here. I mean, in a sense, let's go back to the 13th century, 1239, a Jew by the name of Nicholas Donen converts to Catholicism, to Christianity.
He became a Dominican, right?
Yeah. He then went to the Dominicans and said, do you guys know what's in the Talmud? And, of course, they didn't know. And Raymond of
Pennefort,
then says, geez, this is important. Let's go to the Pope. And so he arranges a meeting with the Pope, and then Gregory the Ninth, Donen says to Gregory the Ninth, you know, they call the Jesus Christ a bastard in the Talmud. The Pope says, basically, gee, what's a Talmud? He didn't even know there was such a thing as a Talmud.
Isn't that something for 1,000 years, more than 1,000 years?
I mean, it was
years. Basically
their secret Hebrew scriptures, or the esoteric writings of the Jewish rabbis.
Right.
Okay, so he says, well, this is awful. We should do something about this. Now, isn't this refreshing? I mean, when you have a pope who says, well, no, blasphemy is bad. We should do something about this.
Well, that's right.
So he calls a symposium in France and gets the king of France involved, and the Jews are obliged to go to this symposium, and they're asked to defend the Talmud. Well, you know what? They couldn't defend it.
No.
They're confronted. First of all, it's not a public document. It's only insiders know about it, and here was an insider who had become a Catholic, a rabbi who had turned Catholic. And he confronts them with the thing, and so what the rabbi says in response is, yes, Jesus and Mary are referred to in that way in the Talmud, but it's not that Jesus and Mary. One Jewish commentator on this thing said this was the beginning, the birth of Jewish humor.
Well,
I mean, this is not the only time that this happened. It happened again at the Disputation of Tortosa in 1410 when St. Vincent Ferrer was working for the conversion of the Jews. They at this point, they were, you know, they sat there and listened to these, again, Jewish converts to Catholicism, saying, you know, chapter and verse, this is what the Talmud says. And they wrote a statement saying, basically, we do not know how to defend this book. We are sure that it can be defended, but we don't know how to do it, and so we would be happy if you just let us go home. That was the response of the rabbis at the Disputation of Tortosa in 1410.
Well, that's defeat. That means that...
Well, they didn't know what to do, and in a sense, Judaism was such an anachronism by this point.
And actually, a lot of Jews converted to Catholicism.
Well, huge numbers, because the general sense was that Judaism was simply inadequate in defending, it couldn't even defend its own basic tenets against Christianity, and so huge numbers of Jews converted to Christianity. Huge numbers. I mean, we're talking about entire communities. There's correspondence in Rome, basically, in which the bishops are saying, what should we do with all these synagogues? Should we turn them into churches for the Jews? Should we, you know, what should we do? We didn't. There were so many converts at that point that it actually caused a problem. And the problem was the Converso problem in Spain, which was a long and tragic story of basically people who converted to some extent under pressure and then secretly practiced religion and led to all sorts of problems. But I mean, what we can't deny is the fact that large numbers of Jews converted, and many of them became high officials in the Catholic Church who were sincere Catholics.
Well, that's why Roman Catholicism is universal. It calls all men, all women to conversion, regardless of your race.
Yeah, I think that this. But the refreshing part about this era is the sort of, you know, cause and effect, the simple sort of the type of reaction you would expect.
Right.
So it's not just okay. It's Raymond Penafort then assigns. The Pope then gives the commission to the Jews and, I'm sorry, gives the commission to the Dominicans and the Franciscans that their role is now going to be to convert the Jews and the Muslims. Hmm. And so one of their members, Penafort, would then asked Thomas Aquinas to write the Summa Contra Gentiles, which was for people who were not of the Christian faith. And he persuaded Raimondo Martini, to write a book which came known as Pugio Fide, the Dagger of Faith, aimed at Jews and Moors.
That was actually a very effective work in converting
it
Jews.
It was very
and Moors.
Effective. I mean, we don't hear about books like this anymore. You know, no one comes out of the interfaith dialogue and writes a book called The Dagger of Faith, aimed at Jews and Moors. You just don't do that anymore. So there's a kind of innocence that the church seems to have lost, and it's involving itself in this arcane kind of Byzantine dance step known as interfaith dialogue that has no contact with reality, as far as I can tell,
and apparently no contact either with the truth. And I would dare venture to say it's going to bear no fruit, not as fruit is to be understood in the spiritual sense, in the true sense. It's going to result in confusion and even lost souls. Well, we're coming down to the end of our time here. Is there anything that you want to add here in conclusion?
Just that there is no possibility of dialogue on these terms. If dialogue means you have to repudiate the gospel, then what's the point of dialogue? And that seems to be what the rabbis have said in Rome. If you repudiate the mission to go out and baptize all nations, you're repudiating Christianity.
And it seems like the basis for that repudiation is stated purpose to have tolerance and a stated
Where's the tolerance here?
But there's no tolerance, and it seems like there's a big play on guilt.
Seems that way.
And so as a result, it's a bad situation. It is an untrue situation. It's a harmful situation. So once again, folks, read Nostra Aetate. You can get it on, if you Google it, you can pull it up. You'll pull it up on Catholic.net. You can read the document. You don't have to wait for some body in some diocesan editorial office to tell you what it is, or somebody who really doesn't have the truth at heart to tell you what it is. It's not a long document. It's only 5 paragraphs. I printed it out this afternoon. It's 6 pages, and it's got footnotes on 1 page, so you're reading 5 pages, and that's the landscape. That's the short page. So believe me, it's a quick read, but you got to read it carefully. It's got in it, it's got the key points that the Catholic Church is the new people of God. It's the new Israel, which is consistent with the Catechism, that we are the chosen people being Roman Catholics, that we have accepted the fullness of the truth and we are to live in that truth. And so read it. It's an important document. It's good to know just exactly what it says. Mike, I want to thank you for being on the show, and until the next time.
Thank you.
Good day.